accession number 29909, reel 3.
Jim Lost, reel 3. Did you find your initial training difficult?
Not really. A bit heavy at times, especially barely bridging at night when you're humping them there and
Could you explain how that worked? The bridge building?
Bailey Bridges, yes. We went down to Wallingford. That's not a bad guess, is it, eh? Not too bad up there, is it? No. Oh, a bit of a laugh, really, because them two Londoners, they went into this hotel. They were potting or something. Poor Roddy Sergeant. And we'll fall out to catch his train. And he called out. He'd had the message from this hotel. And it was they were missing a few bottles of drink. And he said, you know, he played me like with a bunch of us. He said, who'd been in there? Who'd done this? Who'd done that? And they searched all the kids and whatnot. But on the train down to Wallingford, they had it on there. God knows how they got it on there, but they were out there searching, you know. Oh, they were buggers. But see, they were life, you know what I mean, you know, when you're in a circle like that. You know, they kept your chin up a bit, you know. Although, you was that's what I said about when Gilly disappeared, you know, like he did. He wasn't frightened of what he was doing. He never was a word of that. Because I'll tell you what, Fitzpatrick was a boxer in that mob, and he picked on me for Ruddy Morning sometime, playing around, you know, sparring like. But the biggest laugh in that their landing, when we got up into Narvik, we were all split up, and I was with another couple of light, and we were behind his balls because, you know, a mess. And we see Fitz and another couple going along this little narrow road on the hill, and all of a sudden they were jumping about. What the hell was the matter with them? Because I'm talking about a fair way away. And I was jumping all over the bloody road. And then they jumped over the side of the bank. They were being machine gunned. Yet we were laughing and taking the bloody mick what they were doing, you know. That's the sort of thing, you know. Even with the grains, when the planes come and play Mary Hell, when you're scrambling over, someone were making the cock up and they were taking a mick out of each other, you know. I can't remember there was any fear sort of thing, you know. I can't think there was any frightened attitude, you know. Just a question, what the hell is this all about, you know. I don't know. Now I think we must have been ruddy crazy, you know, but there you are. There was no frightening attitude, you know, not with any of them. Might have been one or two, but I never saw anybody, what, you know, didn't want to do anything or do that. Whatever they'd done, they'd done. And I say there was 5 undergrads in that there last mob, and the Essex, you know, good sport.
Yeah. How was it you came to join the force being sent to Norway?
What?
How was it you came to join that force that was sent to Norway?
To Norway? Just automatic. We joined this here 49th Div, 3 section engineers. And we was posted. Well, as you say, that there's scissor force, you know, what we got pulled into. We didn't volunteer into that. We was automatically put into it, you know. We never knew nothing. We got on that boat on the Victoria. We was innocent of all that. Till, in fact, We didn't even know what I know now, you know. We were involved, but you never know what you're involved in. I mean, if you volunteer, they don't tell you what you volunteer for. They just say, we want 10 volunteers to do a job to get sorted out, you know, because we see what, I mean, going up to Norway, you know, when we got involved with them submarines and that. I mean, that's no picnic, to be on a boat when them dip charges are running. You think your own ruddy boat is going, because they thump like hell, you know, when they go off. And I say, when they fished them out on some onto our boat, we gave them our overcoats, you know, because, well, up in the Arctic, and exactly warm weather for them. It's like Iceland when I went there. I was in, you know, I went on that pumping job out of the ruddy geyser around that Thingvella Hospital, you know. But I got pushed off that onto the stores. I met Helgi Magnussen, you know Magnussen? His family, I've been involved with them. In fact, I went for a trip in his ruddy got Yankee. What do you call them? The biggest Yankee cars. Oh, oh, wealthy lot of in that Iceland. Oh, what the hell? What is that man? What's the top of the range American car?
Cadillac.
Yeah. Helgi had a Cadillac. Yeah, that's something in those doors. Because I could understand that, because Iceland, the Americans were pumping stuff in there, but huge equipment, you know, building equipment, well, equal to any big one here, you know, and it's just Icelandic builders were coming in and drawing the stuff. I didn't understand what it was all about, truthfully, whether it was for this here thing about the hospital, you know, because they needed it, because the amount of fellas what got caught in them subs, you know, with that convoy of Dark Angel, because they went by there, they called in Reykjavik, you know. And someone was stupid. They used to say what they'd got on, which was the last thing they should have ever said, you know. But some of them did. And I know some of them went out and got involved with the nest of subs. And three parts of that convoy went, you know. Because that thing about the hospital that was stacked with these merchant navy, they were coming in there by the loads, you know. Hell of a place.
Mm. On that convoy to Norway, do you know what, which submarine it was that was sunk?
Didn't he put it on there, which one it was? It was one of the first that was sunk, according to him. Where he got it from, I don't know.
How did the crew and the soldiers aboard the ship react to the Germans, when they were taken. How did the crew and soldiers aboard the ship treat the German prisoners?
Well, I'm telling you, as far as we were concerned, three parts of them didn't want that the more than we did, especially when I said we were involved with that American lot. What got out of Germany to get out of that mess and then got sent back into it. Let's face it, I mean, they already didn't want no part of it, but the poor beggars were sent back to blooming Germany to be put in uniform and parachute dropped on her. And I said, 90% of them were killed. Well, I don't understand why America done that, you know, because they had families at home, you know, in America, and picked up the men and posted them to Germany, you know. Do you understand that, you know? I don't, because they fed Germany to fight us. You know, didn't make sense. You know, and I say 90% of the poor pigs were killed. And as he said, when he'd laying there, well, I should say, well, he had gangrene because he would his leg was frostbitten because he was out, you know, lost in the bits, I suppose, with this bloody shell. And I was gangrene, and he was in a hell of a state. I should say he's morphined up to the nines, you know. Whether he survived, I don't know. But he was only a young fella, you know. And he was crying out, want no part. I thought he was English, you know, and he wasn't. German. And that's why I said, we were saying to each other, who the hell's got us involved with this bloody mess, you know? Didn't make sense. Because since then, the amount of Germans I've met and whatnot, hell of a range of them wanted, well, look, their country was ruined just as much as ours. And what did it achieve? Nothing, didn't it? It's my way of looking at it, you know. We just get one or two politicians that get into this here muddle, like we're in a ruddy muddle at the moment, the sooner it gets to some idea of what I say, withdrawal, but, you know, not forget it, but let them try and sort themselves out, because we're not sorting them out, we're just escalating them, you know, because we're driving the youngsters into it, the same as they've done in Bloomin' Ireland. Now Ireland has woke up to the fact that they didn't get them anywhere, and now they've realised it's time to, you know, shut the door. And that's the way I look at this. I feel as though soon the people are going to start, you know, saying, right, enough's enough. We're getting sick and tired of these fellas getting killed and families ruined. And what they accomplish? Nothing. Because when you've got fanatics like they've got, little bits of kids, 10 and 12 years old, wrapping that stuff around, and then the next minute crying the ruddy eyes out, they're pumped full of ruddy rubbish, you know. Well, I've seen them in Palestine, you know, it doesn't make sense. In fact, I think it was Palestine on there last night. I like Palestine, you know, the people there, the Jews, they work flicking hard, like Gaza. When I was at Gaza, there was nothing. Now they've built the blooming place up. The Arabs sit and watch to me. They just sit back and watch and build this all up and think they can walk in on it when it's done. That's my attitude, you know. Why the heck don't they do it, you know, instead of sitting back? I mean, the Jews, they're all enterprise. Well, they've been known for that, but, you know, let's face it, they bring up families, and what I've seen of them, they work really hard and achieve something. But I think the Arabs have got a different attitude. I don't think they just mixed. The sooner they learn that, the better. There won't be no peace until they stabilise themselves.
Back in Norway, when you first arrived at Harstad, what happened?
Well, we got off the boat, and I said that's when we was running along the beach when them planes came over, you know, and we were jumping either side of the bollards, you know, and then we finished up in, well, two or three houses, you know, they were empty, you know, people had sort of gone. And I see the sergeant picked up one with the balcony, you know, and then I said, this here mine there came up right up to the, you know, the fields, they come right in, and you know, I walked away. And when we woke up, the mine there was outside, and we were prayed onto it. And this year, I don't know who he was, whether he was that one that got us involved in the first place. Come on and said, well, we want 10 volunteers to do this, that, and whatnot, you know, and to get this mess over and that. And we volunteered, you know, we just stood forward, the 10 of us, and we were taken round to the cruiser, taken aboard, went down and had this curry, then all of a sudden all the firing started, went up, stood to the side of this gun, which I saw that 300 get blown to pieces with, you know, which I said 3 or 4 days later I saw them piled up like they were. I'm talking to that one, you know, what said, didn't want no part of it, but was pushed out there. That we didn't understand why the America had done that, you know. But there you are, they did. But, I don't know.
The voluntary mission was to destroy the cannon firing at the convoy.
What?
The mission you volunteered for was to destroy cannon firing at the convoy, was it?
Yes. Ah, well, when we got up to the town, what happened? There was a hell of an explosion, and half the mountainside come down, you know. And what had happened? The Norwegian Freedom, there was hundreds of them, I suppose, and they must have put a shell down the tunnel or something, because the tunnel was full of explosives, and it blew, well, hell of a mess, it blew up, upside down. In a way, I'm glad we didn't take it on. Well, I said we didn't take it on. It was as close as it could be, but, I mean, we just... I reckon they must have put a shell down the tunnel or something to do that, you know. But we were supposed to go up there and destroy the rail track. Like Pescara, that rail track there, clipping that gun cotton on, you know, but the convoy coming through, and that sort of business, you know. And you don't hang around, you know, you do your job, but you get, you know, what's left, there's left of the infantry to sort out, because, I mean, there's only 2 or 3 of you, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, you know, only destroy what was wanted, you know, that's the sort of thing we've done, like, you see, a ring mining. See, the trouble is, you're doing jobs, you're sent on jobs, you do not ask questions, because you don't get no answers, you know, when that's set up. And you just do as you're told, and, well, go from one job to another, and that's the way we did. But I escalated into so many, you know. Like a lot of fellas, they join up one unit, and they go right through the campaign with that. But look how many I went through. I went, gosh, I don't know, it's... It's a 7, I don't know, there's several.
And you mentioned earlier that you met some soldiers from the Foreign Legion.
Yeah, well, that one what got shot, and that one what came from Norwich, yeah. Yeah.
Do you know how they came to be there?
Yes, because that cruiser was by the side of our cruiser. You know, they were landed on there, just the same. I can show you a little bit of that. Here I do, to help you. Yeah, that book. I took the little book, see, so you have a look at that. That part, all the part and parts, that's the four and leaves in it. Well, you'll see. I've got your toilet. Yeah. Jordan, we had some funny jobs. You know where the Dead Sea is? When you, do you know much about that area? No. Well, there's a big cliff which has been honeycombed where they live in, you know. And the side of it, there was an underground, they said it was a hospital. And we had orders to go there and destroy it underground, you know. We don't know why. And the Dead Sea was out there. And we had a bulldozer. And we went to the dump and got some big French bombs. What a good thing they were. And we lowered them down in the shaft of this underground place. And we put plastics on it. And I just imagine the, I don't know, anyway, we took a good walk. And when it went up, we had Arabs on the skyline. That didn't do the little wood nuts much good, you know, because the vibration, I suppose. I remember that. And Jordan, yeah. You know, we shot about all over the building, guys.
Could you describe what equipment you were issued with for the Norway mission?
Well, as I said, we had Lewis guns. I went on the landing with all that gear we had. While I went on the landing with the blooming anti-tank rifle, plus, because when I got on there and up the hill, my mate, when he got off the boat, left the flipping ammunition on the boat. So when I got up the hill, I was lugging this thing about. Pointless, you know. So when I got into the medical corps place, you know, where we had that cup of tea and that bit of a sort out, I left it there. It was pointless carrying that about, but none of the ammo was on the boat, you know. Oh, yes. But as I said, that there Lewis gun would have been one of the best things for helping us, because I should say those planes just played hell with us, you know. They did. They actually looked as though they were grinning when they were coming down. You could see the pilots, you know, because they come down so ruddy low. Not only that, they dive and drop them blooming splinter bombs up, and then the next minute they dived to make that ruddy noise that, well, you think they're going to crash. And then, of course, they come blooming rooftop level, come out, and of course, they can sort you out. They start machine gunning. Of course, you do a disappearing act, you know. But we also, if we'd only had that ruddy Lewis gun, they wouldn't have been so blooming, you know. At least we could have, you know, had a little bit of help. Why they took them away and give them to Finland, don't ask me. I don't understand that.
And what about clothing?
Clothing? Oh, it was brilliant. Over the top, really. Because you're like wooden bloody soldiers, you know. You couldn't move. You had long johns and vest, which was treated with goose oil. You had their shirt. You had a heavy white polo neck jumper. And you had your jacket. Then you had leather jerkin. And then you had this full-length sheepskin. Well, it told you on there what we were wearing. Even, you know, snow shoes, spike boots, beautiful brown boots they were with spikes in them. And all the gear, well, we're sleeping out in it. A ground sheet on the ground, out in the open, you know. When you go up and down, well, where could you go? That was it, you know. And I say, you get 2 or 3 days without sleep and without a drink, that's not very a bit naughty.
Was it camouflaged for use in snow? Your clothes?
Equipment. No, it's just the point. It was brown sheepskins and you got white snow. We were targets, proper targets, you know. That's where there was a big mistake. I mean, you know, it was smashing, well, I mean, the ski stuff they have nowadays at night, you know, which is warm. That sort of gear would have been out of a lot better for us than this heavy stuff, because you've got a rifle, but hell if you could put it up to your shoulder. You couldn't, because, I mean, you've got all that gear on and this heavy sheepskin coat down to there. Beautiful stuff. But you ride your rifle and you could never get it up to your shoulder. You'd have to use your hip, you know. That's what I said about the Lewis gun. You know, with that, I mean, you knew what you could do with that. A rifle, actually, in that situation was rather useless, you know. We were wild about losing them, you know. Well, it didn't make sense. You know, why did they send them to Finland? You know, took them off us and got rid of them. Now, with that equipment and a rifle, it was rather useless, because I said, when we posted up on that hill, right on the lookout, when that ski patrol went by, we wouldn't have stood up any earthly, you know, because I say they've got, you know, machine gun type of stuff, you know. I don't think they were flying about with a rifle. No.
What sort of temperatures did you have to cope with?
Oh, well, you're talking about the Arctic. Temperatures are all right. But as I say, we had that equipment which kept us warm. Yeah. But it would have been damn sure better if we could have had a brew up now and again. But as I say, on that hill, we didn't have any.
Did you have any training beforehand about living in cold and snow?
No way, no way. Never knew where we were going. We thought we was off to the Middle East till we went and see the equipment. You know, we was on that boat, the Vittori. Going up, we didn't know where we were because we weren't allowed up on deck, you know. And then, of course, when we paraded through to the stores, Christ, hey, what's this? You know, all this equipment, only snowshoes, boots, spike boots. And we thought we was going to the Middle East, you know. Yeah. Oh, no, it was no joke, especially when we got into them subs and that. That sort of broke the journey up a bit.
What sort of effect on the performance of the unit did the lack of training have, do you think?
No, I don't think it was a question of the lack of training, because, I mean, you knew what you was in for and what you was doing. And regards that school of, you know, well, I was in that EF&G experimental demo, you know, demolitions. We were well and truly trained for that, down to the Italian fountain pen. You know that one, did you? Didn't you? Oh, that was the filthiest thing of the lot. All the Munster men's kits would have been, you know, wounded or killed or whatnot, they showered these ready fountain pens. That's what we went round school, told them not to touch them, not to use them. If you attempt to write with them, you lost your eyesight and half your face. The Italians brought that out. That's what we schooled into. That's what we went into these different units and warned them what to do and what not to do. If you're going to a building, don't do this, don't do that. You see, and all this here business of tripping off ruddy stuff, you know. You're going to trip wires and you get the different mechanisms of, you know, tripping these demolitions off, you know. Well, we've schooled into every detail of that, you know. Oh no, Rodwell was way, you know, he never knew when to stop, because I said, he got us involved. We got involved with commander schools, airborne schools, you name it. He didn't, well, his brother said he was like that, you know. That's why he went from major to colonel. But when I left him, he was major, but I can't remember him coming up Italy and that with us. I don't know what the hell he'd done. I never seen him all over him after Gaza.